This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as ever, by accredited sex and relationship therapist, Kate Campbell. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Mum, we're back with another big episode, and I think this title is going to grab people. It's going to very much excite them. The three reasons you're attracted to your partner. Now, I think we should get straight into things. Tell me what this has to do with dicks.
Henry Dix was an army psychiatrist.
That's less good.
Who, after World War II, did some research into what makes a relationship work, because relationships were kind of falling apart a lot. So he did some research into what makes relationships work and discovered that there are three things that make a relationship work. And you love this, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Absolutely love this.
I do, because I love things that go the three things, the five reasons, the blah, blah. I love all that.
Yeah.
Because it seems so easy and simple.
But you love the idea of couple fit as well, don't you?
Well, yeah, which we're going to get into. So, but hang on a minute. Just I want to stop you there, because I feel like is there now a disconnect between the title and what makes relationships work and the reasons you're attracted to your partner? Or are they sort of the same thing in this scenario?
Well, they're sort of the same thing, because because if there's, I mean, it's why you choose this frog rather than that frog. So if you've got a whole load of people and you frogs. Just, something just doesn't click with one that appears on the surface to click, but does with another, it's because the fit isn't right.
The couple fit.
And this research has been done again all over the world. It applies to all cultures around the world. It's the same thing. And it was first published, because it was quite a long piece of research, it was first published in 1965. And it's been done again and again and again and again since then. So it's been around for a long time. But do you want to tell me? Because you know even better.
Come on. No, well, we've had this in recent weeks where I've tried to become the therapist and it hasn't gone very well. It didn't go very well in our Does Age Matter episode, so I think I'll leave it to you.
Okay, so...
I will stop you. So there's three reasons that you're attracted to someone.
Three.
So can you name them all, and then we can go into them in a bit deeper
There's
detail.
The public or social fit. Mm-hmm. Then there's the personal fit.
Okay.
And then there's the unconscious fit.
Amazing. And let's unpack those. So public and social.
So what you would think, it's what other people would say. Oh, you know, they go well together because they're from the same sort of background, you know, same sort of education, same ethnicity, religion, those sorts of things. So they work because you want somebody who's like you. Or because you don't want somebody like you. So equally, if you wanted to piss off your parents by marrying or getting with someone from a different social class or colour or something like that, if you were doing that deliberately to be different, then that would also be a fit. Because it would work that, because you're consciously wanting to do that. But often, you know, those things, you know, you are drawn to people with similar background and things somehow. Yeah. You know, it kind of happens. And then the personal fit, that's things like your how you're attracted to the person, similar interests, or things that you find attractive, like you find a man who smokes cigars attractive, for instance.
Wow, okay.
Well,
yeah.
I don't, by the way. Okay. But, you know, lots of people seem to for some reason. Oh, I love a man with a cigar.
It's quite phallic, a cigar, I sort of think.
Well,
but that's just
tell
me.
Bill Clinton, you know.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Just explain that for listeners who weren't alive when...
Bill Clinton. I can't. It's too rude.
Really? Look up Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky, and have fun with that Wikipedia page.
Yeah, yeah.
Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky, cigar, and don't go on images.
And blue dress. Oh,
blue dress.
I'm actually quite traumatized by that because it reminds me of that being on the news when you were sitting around eating your supper, you kids.
Yeah.
And your sister said, "What was the stain on the blue dress? Why did that man put a cigar into that woman's china?"
China.
Oh, God.
Oh, yes. Dear. How did you wriggle around that one?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Well, anyway, wait, where were we? Let's get back on track.
Okay.
So public and social. So these are the two conscious ones, public and social. So like you say, maybe similar background, that sort of stuff. Then the personal or conscious, which is...
Yeah, the personal conscious, which is like the physical attraction.
Similar interests. I've also got written here sexual compatibility.
Yeah, sexual compatibility.
Getting along, similar outlook, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, because sexual compatibility, that can be a deal breaker. I mean, it sometimes is.
Or a deal maker. You know, I've known people who have been like, I do want to break up with this person. There's nothing else going on, but good God, the sex is good.
Ah, but... that's more short term. And there are things like whether you want to have babies, whether you want to start a family, how you feel about politics. There are similar things that are your personal interests. And I mean, you might feel, I don't ever want my partner out of my sight. I want them around in the evenings and weekends. I think we should have similar interests and do things together. And other people for whom it's very important to have some space and they want to go off and play golf every weekend.
And smoke
whatever.
Their cigars.
And smoke.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about the big one then.
The big
unconscious
one is the unconscious fit. Yes.
Mm.
Now that one, of course, you can't argue with because it's unconscious.
Yeah.
So you are drawn to someone because they have the potential to put right things that were a challenge in your past. So let's say I always use the example of an overbearing mother. That's the example I give. Or
can't imagine what that's like.
Yeah, but it could it could be, I don't know, an absent father, you know, that plays golf and works all the time.
Yeah, and smokes cigars. We know the guy.
Cigars.
Yeah.
It could be anything. But in terms of the relationship, it's about your relationship with that attachment person usually or an attachment figure.
So it's an attachment figure. So it's usually a caregiver, like a parent. So it's very early, this sort of stuff.
This is early stuff.
Like your baby sort of thing.
Potentially an element of what we will call trauma, but you know, and that's a whole other issue. But things that are challenging in a relationship don't have to be a big trauma, like, you know, abusive parents. You can have a parent who's a bit critical, not there, very quiet, it loves you so much they can't leave you alone. And intrusive. You know, there could be all sorts of things, and it isn't necessarily about abuse. It can be, but it isn't. And if we're talking about this, we'll talk about something that you have found a challenge, usually. And there's always something. There'll be something. It's something that's left over, unfinished business that you want to go for again. And we know that people do tend to reenact things to get control of them. So other things, other traumas that have happened later on, you might go again so that you feel that
in control
you are, it's something that you, it's not something that happens to you. It's something that you can make go the way you want it to. But the trouble is, when you meet the person, you think, ooh, this person is going to be so lovely spending time with this person because it'll be such a change from my overbearing mother to be with this person who's so not overbearing. They're just really caring and chilled. And then when you get into the relationship, you suddenly find they're worse than your overbearing mother. They're even more overbearing, actually. Yeah. And there's something about the way you project into one another. It's possible to get people to behave in particular ways by pressing their buttons, which is also done unconsciously. So we get responses that we maybe don't want, but we get because we need them.
Wow. Okay.
If you see what I mean.
Yeah, I think so. So help me try and understand this. Mm-hmm. So the sort of baseline is there will be something, we're not going to call it trauma, like you say, but there's going to be unfinished business. But when you were a child, there was something maybe you were missing or something that was, you know, not quite right. There was something wrong, I suppose. And there will be something. Mm. Later in life, you've now, that's sort of been internalized and remembered in your body unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
But because that now, your body understandably wants to put that right unconsciously, mm-hmm. you then start looking for partners who exhibit the same sorts of traits as your previous, usually caregiver from that mm-hmm. early, not trauma, but the things that are wrong. And then you get with them to try and relive that relationship and this time do it right.
And in a very extreme case, this is fascinating because when I realized that this was happening, I couldn't believe it. I have seen as clients several couples where both partners had lost a parent. And they came for therapy because they were kind of in love, but they wanted to end the relationship. And in some cases, they thought they could kind of have a break and then come back together again. In other cases, they just wanted to end the relationship. But it made me realize how often relationships are working towards the ending, and it's the way the ending is managed that is the most important part of the relationship. Stop looking so horrified.
Oh, no, but God, isn't that a crazy thing to think?
It is a crazy thing to think. But certainly with couples where they've lost a parent and they've had no control at all, ending a relationship where they do have control is really, really important. And so and so sometimes it's all working towards that point. And, you know, when you think about it, if you do the work that you needed to do, once you've done that bit of personal development, and what Henry Dix realized was that all relationships are a form of personal development. That's what they're all about, these close relationships. And so if you do the work you need to do, but you still have other work to do, like if you found someone who can deal with your overbearing mother, but not your absent father, then you will need to move on.
Yeah.
So that relationship will end and you'll move on to another relationship where something else happens. And if it's a really good relationship where there's lots of personal development made possible, it's a very productive kind of relationship, it's very possible that you will both do that. Now, if you've done everything you can do, if you've gone through your partners and you're at the last one and all the unfinished business is dealt with, then you can stay put and move into that very comfortable, you know, thing that people have.
Whatever that is. The holy grail of what, just, you know, where you just, yeah, you live your lives and it's fine.
Yeah, and you're comfortable with that. And the point is, you're comfortable with that. If you're saying it's not like it was in the beginning, or if you're saying, oh, it's boring now, then you haven't done all the work and you need to move on. Because if you have done the work, you'll be satisfied. And it'll be okay.
But if you're bored...
If you're bored and you're... I mean, you know, for some people, there are extra things, like they're afraid that somebody will leave them. They're afraid of abandonment and they can't 100% commit to the relationship. So they're wanting somebody and they're searching for somebody who will reassure them. But they usually hook up with somebody who's been let down as well. So they've found a partner who will let them down. So for them, it's the management of the risk that's important. And so sometimes they can deal with that and sometimes they can't, and they keep moving from one relationship to the next.
That's interesting.
It is completely fascinating, but it is so not the romantic, it's the one kind of thing that we're all led to believe.
Yeah, exactly. But in some ways, is there a romance in the unconscious draw to someone else where it's like, I can't tell why, but I am attracted to this person, even though they seem wrong for me.
Well, no, but the thing is, you'll probably think you know why. You'll know exactly why, because they offer, people say they complete me. You know, this person completes me. It's my other half. My soulmate. Yeah. Ooh, all of that.
Yeah.
And the thing is that what they're noticing is that here is somebody with the potential to put things right. So that's what the sense of completion feels like. Also, in the early part of a relationship, and never longer than the first 3 years, often a lot shorter than that, you are affected by hormones. So what the hormones do is stop you from noticing the other partner's deficits.
Yeah, their faults,
and so they're all the things that you know that aren't so great. And your
friends can see. Your friends are being like, "Girl, he's bad news because of this, that, and the other." And you're like, "Ah."
Well,
no.
And you project also what you want to see onto them. So, oh, so caring, you know, you're seeing all of that. And also all the more you spend time together, the more you have sex, the more the hormones make you want to be together. So you bond. So as soon as you do anything that creates a proper sense of commitment, the hormones switch off because then the work's done. So if you move in together too soon, if you get married, if you have a baby or a pregnancy, if you get engaged, buy a house, anything like that, hormones switch off. And then you're left with disappointment. That's normal.
That's interesting. Could that also just extend to saying your boyfriend and girlfriend? I know that's crazy.
Going steady.
Because I know, but like, I feel like it's
having
maybe
sex in the olden days.
Yeah. But I know so many people that will relate to this, where it's sort of like, as soon as you put the label of boyfriend and girlfriend on it, or you know, that you're in a relationship, boyfriend and boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, when you suddenly put that label on it, that we're together, when we're official on Facebook, suddenly, like you say, maybe the hormones drop out, and then suddenly it just becomes really weird, and there's a vibe shift. And
well,
so many people just...
I mean, it's totally whatever would be seen as commitment in your culture. So being boyfriend and girlfriend probably wouldn't be as much of a commitment when I was growing up as it would be now, where people don't say they're in a relationship until it's much more serious than it would have been then.
Yeah.
Because
in your
now,
days, let's say I'd ask someone out, like I rang them up and said, let's go to the discotheque on whatever day. Now we're boyfriend and girlfriend, right? We're going out.
Well, not necessarily, but a lot sooner than that. If you were seeing somebody regularly, I mean, I think it would be assumed. And also, in my day, people were far less likely to have sex with somebody until they liked them, until they were in love or whatever,
until they
felt there was a future for the relationship. And, you know, now that's seen as a form of asexuality these days.
Yeah.
So things things have changed a lot.
I have to have sex with someone to see if I like them.
Well, exactly. That is what a lot of people do nowadays. And actually, there's a real backlash against that, and that's now changing, where people are actually choosing to wait and see if they like people before they have sex with them, because sometimes the sex gets in the way.
Well, I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. The problem is, you can understand it from both angles. I remember. This is slightly different, but one of your daughters was at school, and they were doing religious studies or something, and or PSHE, and they were doing a debate about sex before marriage, which is sort of similar to this. And she got detention for arguing for sex before marriage, for arguing try before you buy, for pushing that. And
but I know who that was.
Yeah, I know. I think you do. Anyway, right, but let's bring this back, because because I just want to touch on the unconscious fit. So when someone,
you just want to touch on
steady.
It. No. I mean, you just want to touch on it. It's huge.
It's huge. But I think we're going to go into even more detail after the break, because I've got specific questions about it. But before we get there, can you tell me, what does it look like in a relationship, the day to day of this sort of thing of living out the thing with your partner, maybe using the example that we gave before of the absent father or the overbearing mother? Like, what does that look like in the day to day of a relationship living out this?
It's more about your internal process, really. It's more about how comfortable you feel. So there are some relationships where when the hormones wear off and you are left with the disappointment and you are left with the fight, which is there, then often on those occasions, people can get into very toxic relationships, which are very stable, actually, because they both feel the need to defend one another. So, for instance, if you felt not good enough because you'd been criticised a bit as a child, or you felt you were competing with a sibling or something like that, and then you found a partner who made you feel not good enough, you might spend your entire life defending yourself, trying to make the other person say you were good enough and make you feel good enough. So you'd be having that fight.
And that's a familiar fight that you had when you were a kid that you were trying to overcome. And now in later life, you're like, right, well, the fight's not over. I never got to prove it.
But you're not conscious of that. You're not conscious that you're reenacting this thing. So that can be a very, very toxic. And a lot of relationships, people stick together forever. They never split up. They just keep on doing it. Over and over and over. And if you say, why do you keep on doing it? They say, we love one another. And you think, well, you don't look as if you do.
No. Yeah, exactly.
What are you getting out of this?
Yeah. And it's the same for both partners, right?
Yeah.
In the same way that I would see something in my partner unconsciously that I'm trying to work out, they're seeing something in me that they're trying to work out. So I love this quote here from Dix that said, couples may only have one argument, but they have it over and over again.
Yes, the same argument over and over again. And it is exactly that. And when I see couples, which I do a lot, as you know, they will often say, we've tried and tried and tried, and it's nothing's working. And I say, oh, what have you tried? And they say, well, we've had this, we talk a lot, we've had this conversation. And I said, well, how do the conversations go? Well, we argue. So they have the same, they know they do it. They know that's all they've tried.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's not working. But to be fair, at least they're coming to therapy eventually.
Yeah. Well, another, a more positive one, a more sex therapy oriented one is where you've got couples who have some ambivalence about sex or about getting too close. I mean, some people are afraid of getting too close because they're frightened, you know, they're frightened of loss if they become too close, or they're frightened of being taken over by the other person. Again, this would be a good example of an overbearing parent, you know, so they're frightened of being taken over. So they have difficulty with being really, really close, and that might manifest as difficulty with sex. And what can happen there is that the couples only have makeup sex. They will cause an argument. So there's that bit of niggle and distance. Mm. And then They have lots of fantastic makeup sex where they feel great for a few days. Then they get anxious again, too close. Mm. And so they burst apart with an argument, have loads of makeup sex. And it's the only way they can do it.
They really have sex. Mm. Wow. Yeah. Well, oh my word. Okay.
Pretty common, actually, that.
Wow. I hope there's people listening to this being like, oh my God.
Oh my God, that's me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll get a bit more of that. I'm going to ask you some more specific questions about this after the break.
Okay.
People often ask me what my regular London pub is, but that assumes there's a pub I can easily return to. So please stop asking that.
London Pub Reviews, written by Paul Ewan and featuring Tim Key. A Hattrick podcast.
Did you save my seat? Why? I'm at a completely different pub now, with different seats. Catch up.
Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Drinking with dignity. Yes, sir. Yes, madam. That's me all over.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Mm-hmm. So the thing is, we've talked about the more conscious stuff, and obviously the big topic there is the unconscious thing. Mm. How does one make the unconscious thing conscious? How do we? Is there a way to notice this in ourselves?
Well, it's hard to know because people often aren't aware that they have something they're looking for, or a deficit, or something that they want to put right. They aren't aware that anything happened. People will typically say, I come from a really normal family, nothing's ever happened to me, don't know why this is going on, haven't a clue. Mm. So it might only be in therapy that people do become aware. But, you know, there are questions you can ask yourself, like, what are we doing? What are we making here? Are we working towards a pleasant day? Or are we in competition all the time? Are we fighting all the time? What is the fit? Am I putting my partner on a pedestal where I expect them to do everything for me, make all the decisions and be amazing, when actually that person has a lot of power and control, which is exactly what happened with my parents. They made me feel I wasn't clever enough to make decisions and that I needed their help. And so, funnily enough, I do still go back to my parents and ask them for advice. And then I go to my partner and ask my partner for advice, and then backwards and forwards. This isn't me, by the way. This is
The person we've made up. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So you will often find that, you know, somebody does that, puts one partner. Often people will come and say, "Oh, my partner's a rock," and I think, your partner's not a rock. Your partner's a shit. But they really believe it, and they've kind of put them in that position. And some people will say, oh, you know, we're so close, when they're not at all, but they need that to be the case. So people can kind of project positives into one another and keep the relationship going that way. And that's how a lot of people deal with it. But it requires a lot of thought to think, what's actually going on here? What are we doing? What are we trying to achieve with each interaction? And also, do we know what the other person's thinking? So if you deconstruct one of your arguments, for instance, or even just an episode where you've been together, you can often ask people, what do you think your partner meant when they said that? And they will say, well, they meant this thing. And the partner will say, no, I didn't mean that at all. I meant this. Mm. And they'll say, well, that never occurred to me.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, what's really going on for them becomes apparent. But until you do that, then they will just go on obliviously believing that what someone's doing is one thing when it's actually another. So that might be they think it's a positive thing when it's not, or they might think it's a negative thing when it's not. But they're not actually listening to one another usually. They're making loads and loads of assumptions and just replaying the tape that's going in their head from their childhood.
Yeah. And does this lead to what you were talking about in the first half, where you go from one person to the other who exhibit these things and you think they're different all the time?
Hopefully you won't keep doing the same thing relationship after relationship. Hopefully you will learn and, you know, have done your personal development within one relationship before you move on to the next one.
So it's a good thing that we have this unconscious fit. It's a positive
driving
force.
Absolutely.
What about the whole from relationship for relationship thing, though? You know, that doesn't really lend itself to monogamy.
Well, we've been told, we've been sold the idea that relationships are forever. And what I'm often saying to people is, stop worrying about forever and worry about now this minute, because now this minute you're having a terrible time. Fix that. And stop.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are just wanting some kind of reassurance that their partner will be there forever. But they don't know if they're going to want them forever.
Mm.
You know, I mean, the chances are if you chill and just enjoy what you've got and absolutely make the most of it,
then you will be
having a good time now. And that future proofs you, actually. While you're fussing and worrying and trying to get things out of one another, and you're not enjoying it, and you will actually destroy the relationship.
Mm. And like you say, I mean, we talked about this on our How to Heal a Heartbreak episode, but like focusing on now and making that good This is a thing you said in that episode, which I loved. Now may last forever.
Indeed.
The present may last forever. So it's like, so it's that idea of, you know, people trying to fix the future and all that sort of stuff. Mm. So, but that's good. So the unconscious thing, I shouldn't necessarily be afraid of this, like, pull.
No, no. Yeah. But let's say an example is, say somebody didn't feel looked after as a child, and they found a partner who looks after them really, really well. Now, that may allow them to experiment and discover that they can do more than they thought they could. And that may be great. But if then the other person doesn't pull back a bit and allow them to do
growing,
their own
keep
thing,
being more
keep growing and trying new things, if they then want to do everything for them, that relationship will end and they'll move on. But if both of them feel, okay, we've realised where this has come to, I don't need to be so involved now, I can pull back a bit, that person's now flying, then they can probably stick together.
So it is possible to like you say, we sort of suggested in the first half, but to stick with the same person.
Yeah.
Okay, that's really interesting. Okay, so is it possible to be with someone who doesn't fit these things? Let's say they fit the other things that we're talking about. Let's say you don't have the unconscious fear. Let's say they're not like your overbearing mother or your father that abandoned you or whatever, but they are the social class that you like, the ethnicity that you like, your religious backgrounds are the same, and guess what? They're really hot, but they're just not like your absent father.
There isn't the unconscious fit, whatever that might happen to be. Right, well, according to Henry Dix, you need 2 out of 3 of these three. One of them has to be the unconscious fit. So it's no good saying, well, I don't have an unconscious fit. Our relationship's not like that. It's just the relationship. We just like rubbish.
Wow. So what you're telling me there is, let's unpack that further. Let's say I was going out with someone, or I was dating this guy. I thought he was ugly. I thought he was, I didn't think he was particularly interesting. I also thought the sex was bad. However, let's say he, you know, again, this guy has the social background that suits mine, religion, I don't know, social class, he's got loads of money, and he reminds me of my overbearing mother. Mm. Would that work?
Yes.
Really? Even though I thought he was fugly?
Well, but you know, you don't. Yeah, I mean, if though you are attracted,
I'm still drawn to them.
You're
anyway.
Attracted to him. His, he, you know, the ugliness isn't necessarily going to be.
So I feel really
an
mean,
issue.
But yeah.
Is it? I mean, physical.
No, exactly. That's the point. It's the draw is there regardless. It's not just about looks.
Yeah, it's not just about looks. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, if looks were the most important thing to you, and they, I mean, really, what it is what affects your sense of identity? Remember, this is a form of personal development. So if going out with someone ugly made you feel ugly and not good enough, then you wouldn't do it. Right? Because that bit would be really important to you.
Yeah.
And something, I mean, for instance, you might come from a rich family who all went to university, but you're really attracted to this person who is very, very, very good looking, who came from a working class family where everyone was a manual worker and didn't go to university. Right. Yeah. So that would appear to be not a good fit.
But according to the conscious fits, yeah.
Yeah, but because they look the way you want them to do, and because they're all so super overbearing, bingo.
Yeah, you love it.
Yeah.
Wow. Is this why, like, the meme, don't be mean to me, I'll come, is so big?
Is
you
it?
Know, it's like, don't be horrible to me, I love it, basically.
Oh.
And two,
I see, yeah.
Yeah. And two, like, you know, why girls love, let's say girls, but that whole thing of, oh, girls love a bad boy. You know, yeah, he keeps treating me like shit, but I can't stop going back. Is this the unconscious fit?
It might be, yeah.
Wow. Mm. So next time, you know, you're being screwed around by a fuckboy, you'd think, now, how similar is he to my dad?
Well,
what things is he displaying that my mum did?
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
It could be that. I mean, but people often don't realise that their parents were critical. I mean, sometimes it's subtle.
Or, yeah, like you said. Yeah, you said. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't have to be big trauma with a capital T. It can just be how you guys were.
Yeah, and it could also be something that was set in motion really early in your life so that you could never sort of consciously remember it. It could be something that happened when you were left to cry as a baby or something. Or you might, there might be a lot of, you might have a sibling that was very sick and took your parents away from you. So you always felt not as important as the other child. That's not, I mean, you know, the most caring parents can't do anything about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's not obvious, you know, there often aren't really obvious things.
And so there's no way of stopping this other than you just got to go with the flow and do your best to personally develop. And
if you're finding that there's a struggle where that, you know, that the relationship has got a toxic element where it's not moving on, you're not developing, you're feeling less than you should do, you're not happy. Then I would think about some therapy or something, because the therapy could turn it around so that you get what you need. And that's really helpful. I mean, sometimes people who go into therapy are able to use the relationship, individual therapy, are able to use their relationship differently and see different things in their relationship. And that brings them up to the point they needed to reach. It's not always that straightforward. And if you if you're in a relationship where there is also a family, where you've married into a family and you live with them, or they're very much around, they feed into the fit as well.
Oh, really?
So other people may be the most important.
That's interesting. And so the family also fits roles, some roles.
The family
in your head
can have roles as well. But essentially, I mean, as an adjunct, if we're talking about present day ideas of romance and love, which is what was originally studied, but it works even if it's an arranged marriage, it all works as well. But if it was, you know, today, it tends to be the relationship between the couple.
What if you've listened to this whole episode and you've gone, your arms are folded and you're going, well, I've never felt like this. Is it possible to just have a normal bloody relationship?
Well, that is a normal relationship.
Yeah.
So if you feel you've never had any problems with your relationship and that it's all going along the way you want it to, either you're projecting what you want onto that person and that's working really well for you. Yeah. Or, I mean, and you will be projecting, or you have done the sorting out unconsciously and you're in that nice, comfortable place.
Yeah.
I mean, you've heard of conscious uncoupling.
Conscious uncoupling. Wasn't that what Gwyneth Paltrow and
Chris Martin
did?
Yeah. And it happens when couples feel they've reached the end of the road, but they still care about one another.
Yeah.
And so they can separate. But our society doesn't like that, because if you can still be nice to one another and you still get on and you still say you love one another, then why can't you make it work? Because relationships are supposed to last forever. That's what we say.
And
we should do an episode on the romantic love discourse one day, because that blows my mind. I mean, you know, you see how much the idea of one person is socially constructed.
Well, I've written that down. And that is something that we can use to say to people, get subscribing, get following, because you will want to hear this when it comes out.
Oh, yes.
Wow. Mum, thank you so much. Very much enjoyed that. I think I'm going to have to go away and have a think about about a lot of this stuff. Please, everyone, do get in touch with us if any of that has sort of like, I don't know, it's tickled your pickle, so to speak, because or tickled your Henry Dix, because I think that's so interesting, and I think it gives us a lot of things to think about with our previous relationships. So yeah, let us know. We are at the RSC Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and X.
Oh, formerly known as Twitter, of course.
Yeah, of course. It does. Yeah. Just always feels like you're slightly late on that.
I am, because I'm daydreaming. I'm not listening.
I know,
I'm
it's
not
terrible.
Ready for the cue.
But let us know there. We have our anonymous Google form in the bio of this episode and our social media channels. If you want to get in touch with us anonymously, maybe with a question about this or a question about anything sex and relationship related, gang, we will see you for some real sex education after school, where we'll answer some of those questions. Until then, thank you so much for listening, subscribing, and rating us on iTunes and Spotify, wherever you're listening. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.